Hello, venturers, and welcome to Campaign 2, Episode 1 of the Venture Maidens podcast. If you are brand new to Venture Maidens, welcome! We are an actual play D&D 5th edition podcast that champions role-playing, friendship, and crafting epic fantasy tales. What you are about to listen to is the beginning of our second full-length campaign, which takes place 10 years in the future after Campaign 1. But don't worry, this campaign features a brand new cast of characters, and you don't need to know anything about Campaign 1 to enjoy this adventure. And for those who haven't listened to Campaign 1 all the way through, you can still dive into Campaign 2 without fear of spoilers. We post new episodes of the show every other Sunday after live streaming them on our Twitch channel on Wednesday evenings. If you like what we hear, we would love for you to follow us on social media at Venture Maidens Everywhere to catch all the hot goss about what we're up to. And of course, if you really like what you hear, please do leave a rating and review in your podcatcher of choice to help other folks discover the show. Before we dive into the action, I have to give a big warm thank you to the Venture Maidens Patreon donors and listeners who have supported us these past years. A thank you to the fantastic Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, and to Sirenscape for providing ambiance and background audio. But that's all the business, so let's buckle up and dive right into the action.
Gather round, travelers, to hear a new tale. Our story begins in a world at war, where neither fae nor mortals know quite what is in store. But from humble beginnings, three heroes will rise, destined for greatness, laughter, and sighs. It is spring when our beginning is spun, and fairies now struggle with the fate they have won. Welcome now to Campaign 2, Episode 1, Spring Awakening.
Welcome to Campaign 2 of the Venture Maidens podcast. Oh my god, I am so excited to be here. We all are, if you can't tell, we're excited, we're nervous. God, thank you all so much for being here. Yes, welcome. If you are new to the Venture Maidens podcast, we are a D&D 5th edition actual play podcast. Before this campaign, we were running one campaign that lasted more than 5 years. So now, today, we are diving into a brand new campaign, brand new characters, set in the same world, but 10 years in the future from that first campaign. So there is a lot of stuff folks familiar with Venture Maidens will recognize, but there's going to be a lot of new stuff, and I cannot wait to dive into this journey. But of course, I guess let's get started. Hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I am Katie, and I will be playing Luvira Saf, your Drow Rogue.
Hi, I'm Nassim Etemad, and I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Tony Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and tonight I am playing Aoife Flannery, your satyr bard.
Oh, wow, you all did so good saying those new characters right off the bat. Oh, God. How are y'all feeling, everybody, being here, starting a new campaign?
Sweaty.
Oh, man.
Totally calm. Not nervous at all. Very prepared.
Totally ready. Mm-hmm, mind, mm-hmm. Body, and soul.
Yeah, I definitely feel ready, and I definitely have all my notes, and everything is fine. Damn. Are we ready? Are we ready to play some motherfucking D&D?
I think ready as I'll ever be.
Cool. So I figure the way we're kind of going to start things off here is we'll do it as we're telling the story. I'll have moments for each of you to introduce exactly what you look like, your characters, maybe talk a little bit about what we're about. But I think we should just go ahead and dive in to the narrative action. Y'all ready for that?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's go.
Do it.
Okay. Campaign 2 of the Venture Maidens podcast starts with a dream. So, Aoife, this is a dream that you have had often, almost every day now since you've settled here so close to the Feywalk jungle. You find yourself in a familiar place, but it's a place you've never been. It's just one you've seen before, time and time again. The trees here grow so, so tall, weaving this tapestry that drowns out the sky. You can't see anything above it. These ancient trees that are hued in purple and midnight blues, lavenders, surround you in all directions. You see that there are creatures here, insects that are huge, the size of cats and dogs. And everything around you is alive with life and sound and music. So you're here too. And what do we see? Who do we see walking through this dream?
So you see this young satyr girl. She's a fresh-faced 17-year-old. And she has this auburn ear-length curly auburn hair and copper skin, and she has these swirling ram horns, and she is wearing this like bat wing crocheted sweater and these like layers of colorful dresses, and you see over her like little satyr calves are like a very deep emerald pair of like leg warmers, as she is just like rather cautiously sort of like walking through all this like vibrant greenery.
Yeah, and it's so strange. You know, the colors and the feeling of this place is always sort of the same, but it's always populated with different creatures. You've come to know them kind of well at this point. What do you usually spend your time doing now? You've started this dream just like this, in this space, several times before, and it's at this point now that you have control over what you do in this dream. So what are you doing?
I think the first thing that she does is she sort of instinctively takes out a sketchbook that she has, and she goes to all of like the flowers and the grass and plants, and she very carefully takes off a bit of it and like smears it across her page, so you just see these sort of splashes of color from the life around her, of these, you know, soft lilacs and these vibrant greens. And then with those like smearings of color on, she begins sketching pieces of clothing, like beautiful, like, you know, ball gowns and casual shirts and blouses, as she uses these to sort of inspire her designs.
Very cool. And out of curiosity, what is your passive perception score? As level one, everybody, so these numbers are going to be very low. I'm curious, what are these scores?
Her passive perception is 13.
Okay, that's pretty good. You're quite a perceptive satyr. So as you are sitting there sketching away, inspired by this strange and alien world that keeps showing up in your dreams, you feel the ground starts to rumble, as if something very large is moving somewhere close by.
So she reels back and she's clutching her sketchbook to her chest, and she's like waiting, and she'll like grab onto the closest like tree for stability.
Yeah, and you do, and the shaking of the ground kind of comes to an even pause again. But you notice that a lot of the sounds, the wildlife that is in this area, has been driven away by whatever this large thing is. So now you're alone in this clearing, and it's become very, very quiet. And you can see through the tree line, something is moving out there. And it's that very frustrating thing, like when you're in a dream and you just know something is there, but you can't quite see what it is.
Yeah, and so I think she's just, it's that feeling of, I think she has that feeling where it's, you know, you're walking forward, but it feels like you're not getting anywhere, as she's just trying to just pick over these vines and everything to try and get it to a place where she can finally make out what this shape is.
Yeah, and you crawl and you fight your way forward. Every step, the vines becoming thicker, the tree roots blocking you where they weren't just moments before. And you are now struggling to climb over like these wall-sized vines in front of you that are just blocking your way. And as you crest one of these ridges, you can see a figure standing so far away, but clearer than she's ever been before. A young girl. You can't really make out her facial features, but she's dressed in a white gown, maybe a nightgown of some kind that's just rustling, and she's holding out something to you.
And she's blinking and rubbing her eyes in absolute disbelief of finally being able to see, and her eyes are just so big and wide with awe, and she just instinctively reaches her hand out.
And you do, and even as you do, the child gets further and further away from you, but her hand stretches out too, as if she's reaching for you, and clutched in her fingers is a tiny white flower, a daisy. And then everything around you begins to rumble again, and that large thing, whatever it is, shifts and moves directly behind the girl, and she's gone. And you wake up in your canvas tent. The first rays of like early, early dawn are starting to peek through. It's that ungodly hour of dawn where, ugh, of course, all the military soldiers around you are getting up and have been up for like hours. But here you are in this communal tent that you share with about 10 other people, since housing still hasn't quite been finished. But where we are beginning our physical location, you are currently in the unnamed outpost, situated just at the very edge of the Feywalk jungle. This place has only been around for like 4 or 5 weeks now at this point. Of course, it's still unnamed because it's still being built. So all around you, you can already start to hear the sounds of construction, of people hauling, you know, huge logs around, bricks, getting those larger structures together that will eventually house a full military base. But what do you do? What is like a morning look like for Aoife?
So for Aoife, like she'll definitely immediately sit up in bed, and she just is just rubbing her face and like rubbing the sleep out of her eyes, and she's like, "That was fucking weird." And
bless. Protect this child.
And she will, you know, throw on her coat because, like, with the chill, like, morning air, that kind of before, while the dew is still, you know, sitting on the grass everywhere and keeping that cool. And she gets up and she immediately opens up, or she lights up like a lantern, and she goes to a chest that is next to where her sleeping bag is that contains just stockpiles of like military garb, and it's just all of these projects that she's working on here. All of these socks that need darning, these jackets that need mending, the canvas sacks that broke through and need to be put together some way to make a sack again.
Yeah, just the brutal wear and tear of daily patrols and long periods of travel. People now are so far from home that it's so hard to get new supplies. You can't just go buy new boots. You have to just do with whatever you have and try to cobble something together. So you immediately dive into your work for the day. And speaking of early, the only people who have to wake up earlier than the soldiers and the people who are starting work are the people who have to feed them. So, Lou, I imagine that we're getting pretty close to the time when the night patrols are going to start coming back from the edges of the jungle, so they're going to be expecting food pretty immediately. So what has your morning been like setting up for this breakfast rush?
Yeah, so of course, when you have been cooking for as long as Lou has, you have an idea in your mind of, you know, the perfect meal that you could serve these men who have been, and women who have been on a long patrol. But what you have instead are like things like oats and stuff to make like a porridge for breakfast. So she has improved the food since she has arrived at camp. But she's just doing the best she can. Everybody, anyone who's there to help, she's very, seriously, not really friendly, but guided them, but very patiently. Her voice, never that friendly. she, you know, is going in, and as people would start to come in, she's just like, fuck. And she, like, takes out, like, this little tiny piece of cinnamon bark from her pocket, and she's, like, got her stupid hand grater, and she's, like, grating furiously over these stupid bowls and, like, yeah, throwing dried berries and nuts over it, just doing whatever can make it better.
So as you are assembling these long, like, rows of porridge bowls, what do we see of you? What does Lou look like?
So she's a drow. She's got this very deep purple skin. All over her body, there's, like, little tiny cuts and scars, and she has a broken nose. Her eyes are, like, this very vibrant magenta color, which goes with her hair, which the bottom has been dyed in an ombre style with beets to be this bright pink color. And it's pulled out of her face with this little maroon handkerchief that matches her high-waisted pants and her kind of flowy shirt tucked into it and her knee-high black boots. And she's, like, a very curvaceous, thick lady with just, like, thighs that could kill a man.
Respect.
I'm so in love already.
and then tattoos all over her arms in the places that are revealed, but always scowling.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. And currently working with you to, like, prep, you know, all the food for the day. Do you work with anyone regularly? Do you imagine you have other staff?
Yeah, there's probably a few other people who, you know, don't really have the skills to tend, like, armor and anything like that. So she's, you know, taken on, I'm sure, a few younger people and just shown them, this is how you hold a knife. Yeah. Not that much. Dear God, not that much of that. Okay.
Oh my God, not like that. Not like that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think the person probably helping you out right now is Winnie. So Winnie Flynn, she's a young half-elf girl, woman, barely, who basically jumped at the chance to leave her family life behind and start this new adventure, you know, going out, building this new, like, frontier place, you know, working with the army. It sounded so exciting. And now she's kind of become like that everyone's girl Friday who is constantly running around doing cooking, cleaning, chores, messages, just the general help. So this poor girl is very, very busy, but she always makes time to be there and kind of help set things up in the morning. So I think right now she's going down, you know, the long banquet tables that have been set up in the big, like, mess hall tent. And she is, you know, neatly stacking out plates and spoons, and she's even, you know, taking some time to put, like, little flowers in tiny vases that she's, you know, collected just to, like, brighten things up. Winnie really enjoys, you know, anything she can do to sort of help things along. So she places that last plate and then looks back over to you and gives you a big thumbs up as you start to hear, you know, the grumbling and crunching of soldiers and patrol coming back from the night shift.
Lou kind of, like, the corners of her mouth kind of perk up for a second in a almost smile, and then she just nods and turns back to her work.
Yeah. And speaking of the night patrol that is returning, Nassim, I imagine that Tony, now having just gotten off shift, like an 8-hour patrol shift, walking around, patrolling the edges of the jungle, probably feeling pretty hungry, but what are we seeing now as you all are kind of exiting the jungle line and heading back?
You are probably seeing Tony, who is still has a decent amount of energy for patrolling for so long. She's got quite a bit of stamina, but she's walking around with her two companions of her faction, of her division, who were out on patrol with her. But she is a very tall, like 6'4", half-orc. Whoa. With bright green.
Big lady.
Bright green skin, has the skin condition vitiligo that appears, I mean, throughout her body and kind of extends through her hair, which is long and black with a lot of gray streaks going through it, like bright white curtain bangs in the front of her face. She's got braids pushing the rest of her hair back. There's some gold rings in there, a lot of gold hardware and stuff attached to her black uniform with a very high white collar. She's got a leather, like, waistband slash corset looking type of armor around her and these like long high to the bicep sleeveless or fingerless gloves that are also leather. So little patches of leather here and there. And she is walking into camp with her guitar still like humming and singing along, playing a nice little strum, little harmony as she walks in. And her two companions are, one is looking pretty tired, pretty out of it, and the other one is exhausted, like dragging her two swords to the ground, like, where's my cot? But Tony's doing okay. She's just ready for a meal and trying to keep the spirits up.
Yeah, so that's Bashar, who has the bow on your side, and then it was Doreen, who is just so tired after a long shift. So essentially, you know, at this fortress, this settlement that is being built, there are only about 100 people currently here in a very small amount of space. And half of those people are civilians, people who are helping to build this place, people who are helping to run it, just taking care of day-to-day needs, ensuring that this area can expand into a full functioning outpost, which means there are only about 50 soldiers or able-bodied people who are going out routinely. So all of you have been pretty overworked at this point. I think all of you have been here for maybe a month, so enough time that you're finally starting to get into the rhythm of things, but it's becoming clear how much work you have to do and just how strapped you are with the resources that you have. So, Tony, how did this patrol go? I don't think you fought anything, really. I think, honestly, you haven't had much action since you've been here. But, I mean, walking through the Feywalk jungles are the border that exists right before you get into the wilds proper. And the wilds are basically where the Fey dwell. That area is the Fey wilds, like, here on the material plane. It's a very scary place. But the Feywalk jungle, most of the time, is like a normal jungle, except for the occasional Fey intruder.
Mm-hmm.
So anything interesting happen on this shift you just came from?
No, I think you're right. I think it was a very, like, lackluster shift. I think the only reason that the little one dragging her swords, Doreen, is struggling right now is because she's one of the newest members, and she's coming out to gain some experience from the people in their last year of service in the militia.
Yeah.
So she's just here trying to, like, learn some skills and survival tactics and build her stamina. So the rest of us, we're fine. We've been doing this a long time. We know what it's like to stay up all night and go through rough terrain. But she's exhausted. So we're like, it's just another night. You know, nothing to worry about. There's plenty of us here if something were to happen.
Yeah. How do you feel about this? The fact that it's been so many weeks and you really haven't seen much action. People talk a big, scary game. You know, everyone in the Eldrin Empire will tell you that the Feywalk jungles are so dangerous and deadly and just full of things that want to kill you. So you came here with that expectation. So how's that going? What's your job satisfaction level at this moment?
I mean, she's chill. She's like, yeah. You know, this is about what I expected. Everyone is always talking like it's the end of the world, like they're so dangerous. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do something now, they'll take us over. But she's really yet to feel that sort of panic, that sort of urgency. It's more like, you know, when things are happening, we're here to protect you. And so far, I think we've been doing a decent job. And the fact that there isn't enough action for us while we're here is proof enough, but she doesn't need to waste her energy, like, telling people otherwise. It's like, let them keep believing what's going on. I mean, it's so far, I haven't seen it hurt anyone other than the people who are in a state of panic because of it, but it's not her job to calm their nerves. She's just there to fight off any beasts that come along.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you're chilly playing your guitar as you're making your way to the mess hall. And Winnie, Lou, you see, runs over to the corner and bangs the large bell that they have, you know, to indicate mealtime to go across the camp. So, Aoife, you would hear that as well, that breakfast is ready. So this is generally the time that everybody who isn't about to go out for their shift comes together and all kinds of sits down in this big, like, cafeteria-style hall. So you all making your way there for breakfast time?
Mm-hmm.
Aoife, is there anyone that you sit with during meals? The three of you, I mean, there's only like 100 people, so you all have definitely at least seen each other around, even if you haven't had like deep interactions, or maybe you're friends. I don't know. Let's explore. Let's discover.
So I definitely think Aoife would definitely look for Winnie, since like they're about in the same like age range.
Yeah.
And it's probably also the only other, like, really young person there. So I think she, like, you know, is kind of like, she waits for Winnie to finish, like, help serving everyone, and then we'll immediately go and sit with her.
Yeah. So then, Lou, you would probably be very familiar with Aoife, since the two of them are friends. So, yeah, what's Lou's MO? When it's time to eat, do you hang out with anyone? Is there anyone you always sit with or talk to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that she's probably sat with Aoife a few times because Winnie seems to be, like, chill with her kind of, like, cold exterior.
Winnie has said on multiple occasions that you remind her of her mom. Read that as you will.
Your mom sounds fantastic. but, yeah, I think that if Winnie goes over there, she would take her own bowl with her. And before she sits down, she would kind of lean over Aoife's shoulder and take out, like, a little tiny pot of honey and pour some on top and be like, thank you for mending my blouse the other day. It's perfect.
Oh, it's no problem. You know, it's certainly an easier project than all of these feckin' jackets I have to stitch and restitch. Ugh, I hate canvas. If I've ever see another canvas bag again, it's always too soon.
I always forget the mouth that you have on you. It will never stop amazing me. But thanks again, and I'll be sure to come to you with something different than a canvas bag if I ever have any more problems.
And Winnie will chime in and say, this part is really good today. I don't know what you did, but it's less chewy than usual.
It's all about the cooking temperatures, because you don't want it to be, you know what, never mind, I'll show you tomorrow.
Yeah, her eyes have already glazed over. Preparing for one of your cooking speeches, I think. And so, Tony, you and your two companions step in here. There are obviously, you probably know most of the people who patrol, the other people who have been assigned here by the military or taken up positions after leaving the military. Are those the only people you know and talk to, or do you also have friends amongst the civilians?
Amongst the civilians, no. She doesn't bother talking or getting to know the people there. It's more the people she has to directly work with. So she probably already does know or has met Aoife and Lou once or twice, and like always tries to bring up the charm around them because they're technically there to support the military. It's like, I want you on my good side. So when,
yes,
when
I would like my boots, you know, fixed first. Yeah. Thank you.
So when she walks in, she's like, hey, Lou, you have some porridge ready for me? It was a long night.
Yes, I put it in the bowl that's slightly bigger than the others. And she kind of like pulls out like a little bag from her apron and hands you like a little bag of almonds and is like, for more protein.
Ugh.
It was probably a long night.
God, you know just what a growing girl needs. Thank you, Lou. She blows you a little kiss.
Charmer.
She just kind of like raises her eyebrows and like turns back to her bowl and is like, no problem.
Yeah. And Tony, you would see that it's not someone you work with often, but you do know that Charlie, who is this very large, wide, half-elven man who takes up regular patrols, sneaks up behind Lou, who's like in the process of making something, and then is like coming in for a big hug, coming in. Lou, is this something you expect from him frequently?
Oh,
or?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then you absolutely know he's coming in for the bear hug and to pick you up.
She just like just in the nick of time, like puts down whatever utensil she's using and just lets it happen. And like her eyes kind of like close in like a familiar discomfort.
Yeah. And Charlie, you know, just the thing where he squeezes you too tight and bounces you a little bit. And he's like, ah, Lou, do you have those double rations for me. Like at long night, I saw a Charlie rabbit.
Voice? Oh. You seriously need double rations for a fucking rabbit?
It was frightening. It scared me. You know, I thought it was a fae. Just popping out of there, you know, like, under the bushes. And then we were like, whoa. And he, like, you know, and like, the guys will tell you. And he looks back, and his patrol who just came in is also like, nodding from the doorway. He's like, and it was like, it was big. I tried to catch it for you, but it got away.
Hmm. Well, better luck next time. And then, like, very loudly to kind of project to the rest of the room, she's like, but I'm definitely not giving you double rations for a rabbit, as she hands over two bowls.
Yeah, and everybody else is sort of like, oh. You know, it's not fair that the cook is, you know, Charlie's brother, so he gets more food. But he's charming. He's harmless for the most part. Everybody kind of likes him. But Tony, you probably worked with him before, so that's another connection you sort of have to Lou.
I'm laughing at the whole thing. I'm like, yeah, we got the sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's a good place to be.
Oh my god, I think Aoife has like the world's biggest like teen girl crush on Charlie.
Oh, it's just like, yes.
It's like, oh hi, didn't see you there. Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah,
oh, a rabbit. Yeah, I have in my notes that he is a male half-elf himbo, so that is his class.
Oh, yeah. She's like head over heels. Absolutely gaga.
That is fantastic. Yeah, so Aoife, Lou, you're at the same table. What, is there anything y'all talk about? Certainly Winnie is very content to fill space if you all don't bring anything up.
I mean, with anybody who gets to leave the camp, Lou would probably be the most engagement, asking them if they saw, like, any herbs that they could have dig up for her to grow over here, any spices that they could get for her to dry, anything like that. But other than that, she just kind of like sits there and doesn't say too much. And whenever like it's just not her turn to talk, she just kind of sits down. And she has like this slight smile whenever her brother talks. But other than that, she just kind of keeps quiet, keeps to her porridge.
Yeah, and I mean, Winnie will start, you know, saying to the minute you say that, like, you know, Lou, you really should come out with me sometimes. Just even walking around, you know, the jungle. I mean, I know we're not supposed to go in there, but there's some really beautiful flowers around there. I mean, look at these. And she points to, you know, one of these little vases on the table. And Aoife, I think you get an odd deja vu moment. As you see the little vase of daisies that has been set up on this table.
She kind of looks like all... Because she's kind of like mindlessly doodling in her sketchbook. And she's like stuffing porridge in her face. And then all of a sudden she just like looks sharply. And it looks mildly alarmed. And then like looks around a little bit nervously. And then just very quietly goes about eating her food again. But in this like very clearly perturbed manner. And like very, very pensive.
Yeah, and I think Winnie, after you like kind of stared at her flower arrangement, she's like, are you okay?
Oh, you know, I've just been having this weird dream where, you know, the same thing happens pretty much every time, but you know, last night I got to see an extra peak, like, you know, when you finally get to the place at the horizon's end and those daisies. I mean, maybe not them particularly, but there were daisies in my dream.
Oh, well, that's nice, I guess. I mean, yeah, like I was saying, you know, there's tons of flowers that just grow around here, all kinds of flowers. And, you know, it's kind of weird because, I mean, maybe it's the fae magic or something, but I was pretty sure that not this many kind of flowers are, you know, like native to this area. So, and she'll just continue to talk on and on about this. And so, Tony, how's it going over at the soldier table? Is there anything in particular you chat about with anyone over breakfast?
I think a lot of us are just kind of shooting the shit. And Doreen is kind of unwinding from the night. Like, oh my god, how many more of those do we have to do? I swear it's been all-nighters every week. Like, and Tony's just like, yeah, I mean, you got to kind of pay your dues and stuff. I mean, if anyone should be complaining, it's me. I'm out of here in just a few more months, but, you know, It'll help you in the long run. This is not the hardest gig you'll have.
And Doreen looks at you with just like heartbreak in her eyes as you say that to her. And that's when over at Ifa Lu and Charlie's table, suddenly Winnie goes very, very quiet. And it takes you a minute to realize the difference. But she's sort of sitting in her chair and kind of starts swaying almost back and forth and turning a very sickly shade of green.
And you see Ifa looks over her. She goes, "Are you feeling a bit bulky?"
I don't know what that... Oh, and she kind of goes to stand up and she misses like clutching onto the table as her limbs seem to grow very, very weak. And she just topples like and hits the floor hard as she falls unconscious. So, and this is something like everyone in the cafeteria can see.
Yeah. Lou will immediately get up and kind of lift her head off the ground and put it on her knees and like check her, see if this is like any poisoning sort of thing she might know or something else.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and give me a medicine check? And I think in the middle of all of this commotion to Captain Harmony Intari, who is the tiefling knight who has basically been placed in charge of this place. So somebody you would know very well, Tony. She is your captain, your commander for all of you. She kind of stands up from her position at the table and races over towards you, Lou, and asks, "What's the situation?"
And with my five, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're looking at her. You're like, God, it could be anything. I mean, she was just eating. So maybe something poison, but also she's eating at what everybody else was, too.
Yeah, I don't know. She just got woozy and fell over when she went to stand up.
And, you know, the captain will look at you with her red eyes and says, "Well, was it something she ate? Everybody stop eating." She kind of yells and people, you know, have the spoons like halfway to their mouth. Any new ingredients? Anything strange? Anything different about food today?
I added cinnamon. It's a stick that I've had for a while.
Okay, well, get her out of here and somebody take care of her. Anyone trade in first aid? So you raise a finger and the captain turns around and looks at you like, "Tony, really? Okay. Great. Well, take her here. You can use my tent." The captain is the only one in the entire fortress with a private tent, so it's a pretty nice offer. And the captain will also say, "And you, Luke, go with her. See if there's anything you can do. Come on."
Yeah.
Everybody stop looking.
Tony walks up, grabs her from the shoulders and armpits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the girl's light. She's, you know, like 5'0".
Oh, she throws her over her shoulder then.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like 19 years old. Yeah. You know, waif.
Okay. Yeah. I head over to the captain's tent.
Sure. Lou, do you follow along? Is there anything you grab?
Yeah, I think that she'll just grab like a bowl and a pitcher of water and a rag and everything just to see if she can just cool water her, you know. Help her come back to herself.
Yeah, and Charlie will kind of call out to you. Do you need help, or I?
What?
Sees Tony like throw her over his shoulder, and he's like,
"We're good, Charlie. Thank you."
Yeah. All right. Okay. Then I'll stay here with And he looks at you, Ifa. What?
Ifa. My name's Ifa.
Oh.
You're Charlie, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. That's my name.
Yeah, I have a brother named Charlie. He's twins with Connor. That's, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that rabbit you saw.
Oh, yeah, it was like this big. And he'll like immediately launch into his rabbit story again that you already heard, but he's doing it again.
She's just sitting with her head on her hand, just like, yes, I love it when you talk. Do the talking.
Yes, talking. So, Tony and Lou, you can make your way easily towards where the captain's tent is. And Tony, the entire time, Winnie is like twitching and groaning gently. She still seems to be unconscious, but she's, you know, moving against your shoulder.
There's no other symptoms going on other than just the twitching. Like, she's not sweating, or I check her vitals. I want to know if her heartbeat is going crazy or slowing down, or what. Is she sweating? If I open her eyelids, what are her eyes doing?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give me a medicine check?
My first D20 roll.
How are we going to do this? This is going to set the tone forever.
8.
An 8. Oh, good. Seems about right. Yeah, so you are, you know, you're doing everything that you should be doing for, like, basic first aid, checking signs, seeing. Her breathing is still strong, maybe a little bit slower, but that's probably normal because she's unconscious. That greenish color to her skin hasn't gone away. In fact, you think it's actually getting a little bit more pronounced as you kind of, you know, lay her down on a cot here. And she continues to move, struggle. It's almost like... like somebody having a bad dream.
Hmm. Interesting. It's the green skin that is throwing Tony off, though. Because, I mean, she's seen plenty of nightmares and stuff like that, but the green skin is what's weird. Can I also make some kind of survival check relating it to plant life? Like, did she encounter any kind of poisonous fauna in the area? Is that that's not the right one. Not fauna. Flora. Excuse me. Yes. Thank you.
For sure. Why don't you go ahead and give me that survival role. And Katie, you were saying something?
Oh, no. Yeah. Lou is just kind of like would say as Tony is thinking about it, like, she ate the same thing as everybody else. The only thing I could think of was she went out searching for flowers and brought back those daisies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's not supposed to be on the border. So who knows what kind of fey craziness could have happened.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that you can encounter that you're not even aware is around you. But I rolled a 12 for that survival.
Okay.
Level 1.
Yeah, level 1. This is great. oh my god, I'm going to like kill you the first time we fight. Because I'm going to just forget how hard it is being level 1. Yeah, so you, again, like, daisies, though, you're thinking about it, you're like, you've never heard of, like, a poisonous daisy. And also, you know, you've been walking around this area, like, you've had a chance to take stock of the dangerous plants in the region. And, I mean, nothing really grows on the borderlines here of the forest. Like, maybe if she was going deeper in, there are some carnivorous flowers, there are some carnivorous vines, plants, things of that nature, even insects. But, I mean, if she wasn't actually walking into the jungle, it's very weird, especially like a daisy or even any of those little wildflowers she had. There's no kind of natural floral life like that that would do this.
All right, smelling salts it is then. Out of her little, like, side leg patch, she brings out a little glass bottle of smelling salts that absolutely vile. When she pops it in, she turns her own head to, like, not sniff it. Yeah. It's potent. And puts it under her nose.
Yeah, and you do. And, oh, Lou, yes, does this offend your chef sensibilities, I imagine?
Yes. She's just, like, has an inner monologue of, my senses are very sensitive. Mm-hmm. I can't be around this, but instead just kind of plugs her nose and just, like, soft gags.
Avert your delicate palate, Lou. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, and you wave, you know, the salts under Winnie's nose, and she gasps and blinks open her eyes, and you see for the first time they are very, very different. They've turned this bright green color. And Winnie's like, what's happening? I hurt everywhere.
Winnie, did you actually go into the fortress, or did you stay at the border? And she's like taking a washcloth and like putting cool water on her head.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, she seems very confused as she's looking around, and she's like, something's wrong. And she lifts up her hand, waves it in front of you, and you see there are small little, like, hairs that have, like, kind of started to sprout at her fingertips. Something, I don't feel good.
Okay. Do we have, like, an official camp medic at this point?
Oh, hell no. You definitely were not You are not a well-established base, so you don't have one of the extremely rare clerics now. You know, 10 years ago, basically all clerics were like, whoop, nope. You know, when the gods left, clerics weren't around, so magical healing is scarce. So other than, like, some basic first aid, you got nothing helping you out here.
Have I ever heard of anything like this? Like, magically speaking?
Go ahead and make me an arcana check. And I should clarify that the hairs are, like, fine and white. Kind of sticky. Almost like a stem of a plant.
I got an 18.
An 18. I mean, people being transformed into things? Yeah, definitely. I mean, curses, maybe if she did run into some kind of spell, or maybe a creature did this to her. You can check her for bites. There isn't anything on her. Like, that she was bitten by. So this is, I mean, this is definitely something magical. And the fact that you're so close to the Fae also, I mean, that's a world of possibilities for what could possibly be happening to this poor girl. But yeah, let's go ahead and jump back to Aoife, who now, Charlie has finished the story about the rabbit. And he's like, well, you know, it's been really nice talking to you, but, you know, I'm tired. Walking around all day and... I should probably check if Lou needs anything.
Oh, yeah, sure. I was going to go over and see if Winnie was all right. She had quite a spell there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I can walk you over there. It's on my way to the tent.
She's like, yeah, oh, that's great. I'm going to put our bowls in the, you know, in the wash bin.
Oh, Lou will get them. Don't worry about it. Young brother shit. No, no, don't worry.
Just picking up all of them and then, like, quickly runs over to, like, the wash bucket that's full of water and, like, throws them in there. And then Fairy just, you see her little satyr legs just, like, scamper over to him, but, like, and, like, steps a step too close and then, like, backs over a step to be like, oh, we're totally not touching.
Yeah, and I mean, how tall do you stand again? You probably don't stand too tall, right?
Yeah, about, she's about, like, 4'5".
Oh, yeah, and he's, you know, a healthy, like, 6'5", so just towering over you. And he kind of waits for you to, like, get your shit together, and then he's like, okay, and, you know, we'll hold up the tent flap for you.
Thanks. And, you know, we'll scoot in, and she'll be like, how is she doing? Is she all right?
Well... She's very green. You two are feeling okay, right? And she kind of, like, grabs Charlie's hand and, like, looks at his fingertips for little hairs, like, what he has.
Oh, yeah, I feel fine.
I don't know. I mean, back in the day, we could have called a healer, but this is not normal. You can look, too. You're a bard. Maybe you've heard of something like this.
Yeah, I've been around plenty of Fae territory, and this isn't something I've really encountered very much, so I don't know where to go from here.
Well, I mean, I think that the only sort of lead that we have is that she was looking on the borders for flowers, so we're gonna have to go there.
But it's dangerous, isn't it?
She might die. We don't know what's wrong with her. I don't think it had anything to do with my cooking at this point, because you all seem perfectly fine. But the only thing that we know is that she was where she wasn't supposed to be. So maybe we can find something if we go over there. And we have perfectly capable soldiers to come with us. We'll be safe.
She looks at Winnie and she sees just, like, how out of it she looks. And she's like, all right, yeah. I mean, it's best if there's something dangerous out there that everyone should know.
I don't know. Lou, you really think, whispering close to you now, do you really think this youngin should be the one to accompany us out there? She deals with, you know, uniforms and sewing. I don't know that they'd be the...
Or have you know, I've got 5 younger siblings, and someone's got to keep them rascals in line. I'd be fine. She puts her little fist on her hips.
Lou looks over at Tony. She's like, I'd feel better if she's where I can see her.
And And Charlie can come too, right?
I mean, I'm really tired, he says from behind.
As he, like, raises his arms, like, Lou just, like, smacks him in the stomach. And she's like, well, wake up. Somebody's in trouble, bozo.
Okay. Wait, what are we doing? Just daisy picking?
No.
He was not paying attention.
She's like, look into my eyes when I speak. Please, for the love of God, Charlie, this is important. We need to go to the one place that we know that she went that not many other people went, because that's the only lead that we have on what's happening to her.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm cool. I mean, I'm off shift. Yeah, I mean, you know, Tony and I just wrapped up for the day, so we're not on call for, you know, like 8 more hours, so I guess if it doesn't take too long.
Thank you. And she leans up and, like, gives him a kiss on his cheek, and she's like, all right, well, I don't think that there's any more resources to be put on one person. So, Winnie, we're going to try to see what we can find out for you.
Yeah, and Winnie doesn't really seem to be paying attention to you anymore. She's doing that thing where she's flipping over her hands and, like, you know, touching the back of her arms. And you see that hair, those little, like, kind of cilia are getting thicker.
I want to ask before we leave her, Winnie, can you tell us what exactly you're feeling right now? Is your sight any different? Is your hearing any different? How are you feeling? How are you perceiving things?
I'm thirsty.
Well, here's some water. And Tony gets her a tall glass of water.
Yeah, which she, like, chugs very fast. And then holds out the empty cup. Really thirsty.
We'll make sure someone's around to get you as much water as you need.
Before we go, can you tell us exactly where it was that you found the daisies?
I don't know. I by the tree line, I walk all up and down the area, and I don't know.
Okay, well, you're gonna be all right. We'll be back.
Hey.
Is there anything else you guys need to ask before we go?
Before we head out, she would want to look, you know, as, like, Winnie is, like, steadying her hands, like, feeling seeing these, like, weird, almost, like, little tendrils growing off the back. Aoife would like to try and use nature to see if maybe, like, that looks like a familiar plant.
I'm gonna go ahead, yeah, give me a nature check.
Nine.
Oh boy. You are, yeah, you're like, crap. Not sure. It does remind you a lot, like, when you see, you know, those highly, like, decorative long-stemmed daisies that have that, like, that texture when you rub their stems, like that kind of soft, like, little bit of spiky texture. It reminds you a lot of those. You're not sure if those are even, like, a native to the area. The ones, like, she had are, like, tiny little baby daisies, you know? But
yeah. Yeah, and she just mutters, daisies, under her breath, and will sit up and wait for everyone to, you know, signify that they're ready to go.
Yeah, I think that we would tap somebody on the shoulder from the kitchen and tell them to make sure that she stays hydrated in the captain's tent. And then we should probably, she looks at all you, we should probably speak to the captain and let somebody know where we're going before we go.
Yeah, Tony will make sure to go over to Captain Harmony and let her know and let her group know that I'll be going out back to the border. Shouldn't be long. We just need to do some investigation. Make sure no one else wanders into an area that's unsafe.
Yeah. Luckily, as all of you are coming out of the tent, you see Captain Harmony is kind of striding over, looking like she was about to check in with you all anyway. So you all kind of meet up, you know, in the outside area here. And, you know, you can tell her the situation. And Harmony nods patiently through your explanation and says, do you think it's contagious? Should we quarantine her?
Maybe wait until we return. See if we return with any side effects. Seeing as we just spent some intimate time with her, and we'll let you know how we're feeling. But for now, don't let too many people come in contact with her. But she does need some attention should things get worse.
Got it. Well, if you all need any more resources from me, we'd like to get this figured out. If we have some kind of threat nearby like this, it's something we need to know about.
Of course. And Tony salutes.
And Harmony will salute back and wait for you all to get on your way.
Hey, Ventures, welcome to this episode's midroll. First of all, I just want to talk to you all about our Patreon. We've been tirelessly working on bringing you choice bonus content for supporting the work that we do here on the Venture Maidens. Our $1 tier gives you access to an absolute treasure trove of content, including the rest of our Rime of the Frost Maiden show, our playthrough of Descent into Avernus, as well as some fun coloring book pages of all your favorite characters. Just $3 gets you access to content to use in your own game. Magical items with fun adventure hooks by Drop the Die, JB, as well as modules written by Celeste and Sage. Our $5 tier gets you a digital copy of our biannual adventure zine, filled with quizzes, stories, games, unique monsters, recipes, and more. For $10 a month, you will get yourself a physical copy of that zine in the mail. It is soft touch and it is luxurious. Next, we have our new tier. At $25, you will get yourself a discount code for new merch for the week that we launch it, as well as a thank you shoutout during our main campaign streams. Finally, the most exclusive patrons can back at the $50 tier. There are only 7 slots available, and they're all currently taken, but keep your eye out for any openings. These patrons get to bring their own characters and sit at Sage's table for quarterly one-shot games. It is all thanks to your support that we've been able to accomplish so much with our show, and we've even been able to set a new goal for ourselves to create a Venture Maiden's score for the show, now that we've already accomplished creating our own world book. Come check out all the goodies and support us at patreon.com/venturemaidens. And now, let's talk about an upcoming event. Have you ever wondered how podcasts happen or you wanted to start your own? Mark your calendars for Pod Jam 2021. August 14th through 15th, 10 a.m. through 5 p.m. PT. It's a virtual convention and celebration of geek culture podcasts. We've got panels like Actual Play 101 and Podcast Nitty Gritty, where we're creating resources for new podcasters and season creators looking to level up. Plus, as if that weren't enough, we are fundraising for The Trevor Project to support LGBTQ+ youth. Learn more at penwitchstudio.com/podjam. And that is all from me. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So, what is the plan? The searching plan? Just kind of walk up and down the border? Just see what you can see, looking for anything in particular?
Daisies.
Yeah, I guess stay close to the border, look for any flowering vegetation, and don't touch it.
Yeah, all right. Well, why don't you all go ahead and, since we're all fanning out the area looking around, why don't we do a group survival check here?
Heck yeah.
I'll roll for Charlie, who I don't imagine is particularly helpful.
No. Nice. 19.
16.
Charlie got an 8.
With my chef thing, since I can have advantage on looking for ingredients and specific things, I got a 19.
A 19. Okay, damn. All right. Sorry, Aoife and Tony, what'd you get?
I got a 19 as well.
16.
Yeah.
Wow! Y'all are fucking great.
We love flowers.
Really into it.
Yeah, so you do a cursory look around, like, the outside, the fields here. So just before you get to the Feywalk jungles, you're technically still in the region that is under the control of the Plateau of Endora, which is miles and miles and miles away from where you are. You can probably see it in the distance, you know, the flat-topped mountain that kind of exists in the middle of the Eldrin Empire. That's the city where, like, the Corellans, who are this ancient, basically, order that can fight the Fey, that's where they dwell, many, many miles. And all around the plateau is sort of, like, marshy farmland. people can, like, you know, eke out a living here, but it's not, like, it's not gorgeous land. Right before you get to the jungles, it's a lot of flat, muddy, kind of gray terrain that suddenly turns into this, like, vibrant and beautiful magical jungle. So the lines are very distinct here. So you're walking along that kind of those marshy valley areas just along the outside, the obvious places where somebody would, like, be if they weren't inside the jungle. And, you know, you do see some patches of wildflowers growing every once in a while. There's a lot more, like, ragged, you know, reed beds and things of that nature. No daisies, nothing that's pretty, basically, out here. So would you like to go a little bit closer or maybe step into the tree line?
Yeah, definitely. I think knowing that that's probably what Winnie did, she would, yeah, make that step across that very clear tree line.
Tony is being sure to be at least 10 paces in front of everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Charlie is right up there with you. You two have been fallen into the rhythm of patrolling, so you instinctively move to the head of the formation here. Oh yeah, Aoife, have you ever... you haven't stepped into the jungles yet.
You've heard
a lot about them.
Yeah, definitely growing up with stories from, like, her grandparents and from her great-grandparents about, you know, where the satyrs and the centaurs migrated from, you know, generations ago. And to is setting her very first hoof into this, you know, into this new territory. And I think she just has this chill that runs over her. And then she notices that Charlie is so far ahead and then immediately scrambles.
Tony's losing her shit.
Don't let that cute patoot get out of your vision.
Keep the boot in sight.
Okay, Tony's seeing that she clearly can't seem to keep away from Charlie, just goes to Charlie, all right, just don't let go of her.
And he's like, oh, yeah, no, I got her. He's like kind of corralling Aoife around, you know, like sort of helping you every once in a while, will kind of help you step over something that you don't notice is there because you're looking up at him or, you know, he's helping you.
Clever girl.
Oh god, I love this so much.
Yeah. So you all, I mean, with that awesome survival trick, I think that carries you all into, you know, this newer tree line here. And you're not going too far at all. You can still see daylight on the other end of the trees, because, you know, once you get like 100 paces into the Fae jungle, like, there is no sunlight that permeates the trees. So all around you are just these gorgeous, ancient, beautiful, twisting trees that just descend hundreds of feet up into the air. This place is enchanting. I think it's that feeling we all get when you, like, you know, walk through a redwood forest, or, you know, you stand at the edge of the ocean. It's just like you can't help but feel like the wow, the overwhelming sense of nature here. And you continue meandering through these pathways, listening to the familiar bird calls, sounds of nature all around you. Aoife, again, it's that feeling of deja vu. It's so much of what you see here feels like what you've been seeing in your dream. It's different, but there's a lot of similarities.
She just kind of has this really dazed look as she's just looking around. Like, just like a dash of concern against her wide scanning eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, and you continue to wind around, and you do find, you know, through the trees every once in a while, little patches of flowers. Little tiny beautiful things. Things you might see in a field, buttercups and, you know, some daisies here and there, and just like other plants that are, you know, basically weeds. Little baby flowers. So what do you do when you find these?
I think Lou kind of looks to Tony and Charlie, and she's like, you two spend the most time in here. Is there any dangers? Everything seems to be a trap when it's pretty.
Charlie shrugs. Helpfully.
If we're actually seeing daisies, and these are the little flowers, for the sake of it, just Tony's gonna push them down towards the ground and with her great sword slice them right at the where they enter the soil at the root and try and collect them with like a handkerchief of some kind without actually touching anything, collecting little bits of flowers here and there throughout their walk and seeing if anything happens to match that same sort of sticky white fibrous stem that was starting to come from Winnie.
Yeah, so you continue to walk around this like very outer perimeter and nothing is really catching your eye. You do take a few of these samples. And then in the distance, you hear a bell. It's the like the meal bell that's ringing, but it's certainly not a meal time. So you know that sometimes that bell, it's very loud. It also functions as like an alarm bell. So you hear that coming from the camp.
That's not good. That's certainly not a meal because I'm here. Should we go back and come revisit? And she just kind of like scans to make sure that there's nothing that they might miss if they were to take back off towards the camp.
We haven't been out here that long, right? We have.
Yeah.
It's probably been an hour.
Yeah.
Perhaps we should if we haven't. I doubt Winnie would have come farther than this, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point to go further once you've found the pretty thing you're after. So, I mean, what do you guys think? I think that we should probably go back in case there's something happening at the camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go back.
I agree.
Sure. Yeah, so you begin, you know, climbing out of the forest and, you know, hustling your way back to camp. And already, before you get there, it is clear that something has happened. A lot of people are up, moving around. People who had hastily changed into night clothes, you know, from coming back from the night shift are now up and moving about and talking to each other in clustered groups. And as you step back into camp, the captain is there, moving from groups to groups, and she comes back. Did you find anything? Someone has gone missing from the patrols. Two of our own. And she says, Malachi and Sandy, who are two soldiers that you've recognized. They're also military trained. So an Eldrin and a halfling gone. Their battalion said something strange about this creature that was like a plant that grabbed them. They disappeared under the ground. It's all very strange. And of course, with her, did you find anything?
Nothing beyond what I've already seen out on patrol. I did take some samples of weeds and flowers that we came across for whoever might have more knowledge about these specimens to examine. But there was really nothing suspicious out there.
Damn. Okay, let me think. And you see that all the people around you, the soldiers, are starting to like gear up and move into their tents to like change and like they're about to go out there. All of you, what are your passive perceptions? Just, I know, Aoife, yours is 13.
Mine's mm-hmm. also 13.
11.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, the captain is clearly like freaking out as this is happening, and she gets a hold of herself and says, all right, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're get your gear. I know we're all tired, but we're all going to pair up, fan out, and see if we can find our people. So we're pairing even civilians. We'd like to go out there. So, Tony, if you're okay with taking care of them, and she kind of looks at Lou and Aoife, and take Charlie and...
Sure, yeah.
We just need eyes at this point. There's a lot of ground to cover, and they have no direction.
But what do you mean these people are missing? Like, they just vanished? They poof? They got eaten by flowers? Like, what do you mean?
So their patrol was walking on the deeper circuit in the jungles, and then vines sprouted out of the ground, and they were pulled down below. No trace of holes, anything to follow. Whatever this plant thing is that grabbed them, there was no way to track it. We checked for caves, tunnels underneath there. There was nothing, so it must have taken them somewhere else.
Did anyone happen to note the time of day, time of morning that it happened? Because we have been out there all night and nothing happened. So
this was only about 30 minutes ago. 30 minutes ago, when you all were out there, this happened. The patrol just came back in. They were a little late coming in for their patrol, their check-in.
All right.
Well, I don't think we should dawdle then. If it was just 30 minutes ago, maybe we can find tracks or something.
Yep, of course. Get whatever you need to, probably some rations. We're going to be out there searching for a while. And she nods curtly and then goes off to take care of other business, talking to other similar squads that are being banded together. And lots of, like, scared-looking people are, you know, being asked, like, construction workers. And other people are like, I wasn't here for this. To get together to do this, you know, this manhunt to find these people.
How has Winnie's condition excelled or improved?
Yeah. Do you want to go and check on her?
Sure.
The captain certainly wasn't thinking about that at the moment, so mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah, if the captain's preoccupied, I'll go into Winnie's, or the captain's tent where Winnie is, to just do a checkup real fast. Sure.
Yeah, so you step in to this tent, and Winnie isn't there. There's nobody on the captain's cot where you last left her. But there is, crouched in kind of one corner of this tent, a young girl. A human child, maybe like 10 years old, with like deep brown skin, amber brown eyes. She seems to be looking around on the ground, searching for something.
Does it look like the girl from my dream?
You've never seen the girl from your dream before. Like, really? In that sense, but I mean, she is about the same size, age. And if you step in the tent, she turns around and goes, "Who are you?"
I'm looking for my friend. She was sick in here.
Oh, she's gone.
Did you see her leave?
Yes, she took off running. I tried to tell someone, but nobody was paying attention.
How long have you been here?
Recently. I'm looking for clues.
Clues to what?
What happened? What's going on? Why your friend is turning into a plant?
Are you from here? Do you live here?
Are you from here? Do you
live
here?
No, I don't.
Oh, then same answer. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm busy. She shoos you. She makes a shooing gesture for you to leave.
Well, why don't you tell me what you found? Maybe we can work together.
And she, like, looks up at you and gives you this, like, scathing look of condescension. As she says, well, I haven't really found anything yet. There's clearly some kind of magic involved here. I'm guessing she had a run-in with a fae.
Hmm. Have you seen anyone get sick like that before?
No. But then again, creatures like this tend to travel.
Creature, like fae creatures?
Yes. The fae creature that is infecting your friend? You got that, right?
Sure, yeah.
She's giving you the punkiest attitude mm-hmm. here. Great. Okay, now that we're all caught up to speed, I should probably go chase after her. So if you'll excuse me.
Well, we're about to do the same thing. If you care to help us.
She kind of looks you all up and down, and she's like, I think I'll probably do better on my own.
Lou kind of like cocks her eyebrow at this little brat, and she's like, well, that's unfortunate for you, because you seem to have some sort of knowledge on this, and that's more than anyone else, so I'm gonna come with you, and I'd be happy to help you.
What even are you? And you? And she like looks at Aoife. She's like,
listen here, you little shite. We're coming along. Our friend is feckin' sick, and she's our friend, and we're gonna do what we can to feckin' fix her, alright? So we're going whether you like it or not. Now get going. What'd you find here with your clues? And immediately pulls, like, big sister energy.
Why don't you go ahead and roll an insight for me? Aoife, as right. You are doing the big sister to this little kid here.
Ooh, nice. That's an 18.
Yeah, this kid is staring you down stone cold. Honestly, like, in a way that is very adult. She doesn't have any trace of, like, give or indication that she is intimidated in any way. And you get this weird sense about her that she just seems so much older than what you're seeing here. She meets you, blow for blow. Fine. You can come with me if you want. I guess I could use some backup. Or at least people who run slower than I do.
Charming. Mm. Well, go on then.
And she goes and picks up her bag that you now see was like thrown into a corner of the room. And on top of that, there is a crossbow twice the size that a small child would be capable of holding. And she hoists this like gigantic thing up. And straps it onto this holster on her back and takes her possessions and heads out of the tent and starts striding towards the edge of the forest.
Aoife looks at the other one's like, are you seeing this?
I just saw my friend turn into a plant person, so this seems quite normal right now. I guess, And she kind of, like, takes out one of her knives from her apron, and she wipes it on her apron front and starts walking off after this girl.
Before she, like, totally trots off, Tony is like, hey, kid, wanna at least give us your name or some kind of reason as to why you didn't bother following our friend out here if you saw her run away?
You tell me yours first.
Sure, I'm Tony. Tony Silvertail.
And Tony, that was your first mistake. You never, never tell a fae your name. Understood?
Oh, so you're fae. Great, good to know. What's your name?
You can call me Rook. I assure you, that is not my real name, but it is what you can call me.
Sure, okay.
All right, Tony.
Doesn't a fake name eventually become a real name, you know, if you use it enough? Like, she just starts like, yeah, bring on.
And you, what's your name?
She looks at you, Aoife.
Saoirse.
At least you were decent enough to lie. Well then, come on, Tony and friends.
Fuck, I'm so sick of babysitting, Tony says audibly.
Sus.
It's been 5 minutes and I hate this. she continues to roll off into the forest here. And you see, as you are stepping out of camp, other groups of five and six are beginning to fan out, spreading out into the jungle here, intending to go deeper and look for these missing people. Any kind of specific plan you all have? Any strategy for combing the jungles?
No, this little child bitch seems to know what the fuck she's doing, so...
Absolute turd sandwich.
It wouldn't be the Venture Maidens if we didn't immediately hate at least one NPC.
I kind of low-key love her, but I don't want to ever speak to her in person.
Sus as fuck.
Yeah. Fair. Okay, yeah, if you want to let her lead, she will absolutely do
so. Yeah, she seems to be the specialist here, so...
Yeah, and so she kind of sneaks ahead here, and she'll, you know, hold back, like, her tiny little, you know, fat baby 10-year-old hand and like have you all wait for a moment, and she seems to be listening for something, and then she'll say, I think it's close. Are you all ready? Have you fought a fae before?
Nope, but I'm certainly not going to tell it my name.
All right, well, if you see any small things, any vine-like humanoids, be careful. That might be your friend.
How close is she going to look to what she looked like before?
Probably nothing. Your friend is probably dead. Dead, you know, in terms of whatever you consider to be alive. Certainly not cuddly anymore. Or whatever.
What are you?
What are you?
I'm a satyr. I'm a 17-year-old girl.
Good for you.
And she continues to, like, move forward and, like, scouts back. And then does the same thing where she moves 30 feet ahead and, like, holds back a little hand. And you see she takes, like, struggles to take this crossbow off of her back.
So if we're not meant to attack our humanoid vine friend, what are you suggesting we do?
Oh, I mean, there's going to be something pulling the strings here, something much bigger, I suspect. If it's breeding new fae, then we're going to be looking for a queen of some type. Does that make sense? There'll probably be a pretty clear visual difference between the thing in charge and then, you know, little minions. Not sure if you're aware, but fae just love to make minions out of mortal folk.
Great.
Right.
Mm. Okay. Attack the big one. Got it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And she said, can you even move stealthily? Is that something in your capabilities?
She looks at you all.
If it just makes eyes at her and, like, just makes very quiet, delicate little hoof clops.
The twig only breaks a little.
Oh, your little clippy cloppies. I'll be fine.
Okay, then she starts to move forward very, very stealthily and
crouches low to the ground, and she waves a hand indicating that you all should do the same.
Okay. We'll do so.
Let's make a group stealth check as we are moving through the woods. Again, I think Charlie... Excellent. Well, Charlie's a rogue, right? So he's decent at this.
Rogue fighter.
Oh, nice. 18.
21.
And a 12.
Bam.
How do we do, Tony?
I rolled a natural one.
Oh, sick.
Oh, no.
Sick.
Hot. Hot.
The things we do for those beautiful gold pauldrons.
So.
Yeah, yeah. So Charlie failed as well. Awesome. But Lou, Aoife, and Rook certainly succeeded. So that is enough to carry you all on this stealth check. So you continue moving forward, and Rook, this whole meanwhile, is like pushing aside like bushes and vines, and she moves so quietly, like supernaturally quietly, as she continues forward, and you see she raises a clenched fist, which Tony and Charlie would recognize as a like trained military gesture to halt, and she does eyes forward, indicating that you all should creep up next to her to peer through the bush line she's looking through. You all do so?
Peering.
Creeping.
Yeah. So as you do, and at this point, you've gotten pretty deep into the jungle edge here, and looking from your vantage point, about 150 feet away from where you are, you see a structure that has been like a half dome that's been woven from branches and like leaves. It's almost like if you imagine like a beaver den that's just been dropped into the middle of this forest, stretching between different trees in the regions here. And you hear something, a very low, it's like very quiet wailing, you would say, but it's almost rhythmic that is coming from somewhere inside of this structure. And Rook will, you know, make eye contact with you all. Are you ready?
Ready to do what? Are we going in?
Well, I suppose that's up to you. I'm pretty sure there's a badass fae in there. So you ready to fight? Or are you gonna run like little girls?
You see Aoife suppresses a big inhale that would definitely be followed by a now wait here. She just sucks in that breath and she points and she's like, and nods.
Tony is just so confused by this child. Like, what the fuck is your angle? You're a fae, but you want to go and fight fae and you're commanding all the- okay, I mean, what? Let's just see what the hell you've got. Like, okay. All right, yeah, let's go in.
She certainly doesn't look like a fae, and she didn't confirm she was a fae, but she kind of left it up in the air.
You say don't tell a fae your name. Tony thinks you're a fae.
Yeah, me too.
Or just helpful in her own strange way.
Lou, like, without even responding, kind of gets up and stealthily, like, makes a move towards the structure. Just ready to go put a knife in whatever fucked with her friend.
Yeah. So, yeah, as soon as Lou starts moving forward, Rook does the same and Charlie follows suit. So you all begin creeping towards the edge of this structure thing. And it's all, you know, woven together very tightly so that there isn't any kind of entrance or anything. So Rook starts crawling around the outside. And she looks up at Charlie or Tony and is like, big smash. Makes like a big sword gesture. So Nassim, will Tony do big smash or will Charlie do big smash at Rook's command?
I think we should do it together, given that we're the only two actual soldiers here. I think we should work in unison.
Sure. So you want to poise up, and what is Tony's weapon? I don't think we've talked about Tony's weapon yet.
Oh, she does have a shield. She doesn't like to use it very much, but her main go-to weapon is a family heirloom of a great sword that has a horse's face profile as the actual hilt or handle, and then engraved into the blade are three other horses in like full speed. Running positions, going down the blade of the sword.
Very, very cool.
Yeah, so you bring the sword down and around.
Smashing!
Yeah, it's like if you were smashing into a wicker piece of furniture. That's how all these branches have been woven together. So with like a huge thudding, thunking, cracking noise, you impact against the walled edge of this dome here. And it takes you a couple of swings to get through, even with Charlie also like driving some hand axes into the edge here. And when you finally crack in and open, you see that the space inside is completely dark. So the dim filtered light comes through. What is all your dark vision status? We get to ask again.
I finally got my dark vision.
Yeah, finally. After 5 years.
I do not have dark vision.
I've got superior dark vision.
You're drow. You're like, yeah.
I see in your soul.
Charlie's a half-elf. Do half-elves have dark vision, actually?
Yes, they do.
Okay. So everybody except Aoife.
Aoife in
like,
the back.
What's going on? You're trying to pick out like the shapes of what's going on in there. And it does seem like a lot is happening. As you all, the rest of you who have perfect visibility, you look into the space. You can see that this dome was just the initial part of a structure that carries much further down underground. So you're looking down this almost well that has just rough edges and rocky walls climbing down and down further into the earth. And punctuated through the walls at various points are these thick vines that seem to be holding pods. Like imagine if it was like a pea pod, except really, really large, human-sized, suspended, sticking out of all the sides, traveling way down into the earth here. And these pods seem to wriggle and move. And every once in a while you hear noises, groans, that wailing humanoid speech that is coming from each and every one of these things in this long well leading down. I think that's where we're going to stop for today. Ah! We did it! We did it! Episode one! Everybody!
Oh my god! It was so good!
Ah! I'm already boiling with rage. Amazing. Thanks to this child.
I know, I made a non-stabby character, but then you had to go steal a child and make them a plant person. Now someone gonna get stabbed.
Someone's gonna get stabbed. You know, adventures begin in ways great and small. Yeah, wow. How you all doing? I feel kind of relieved. We've done episode one. I'm so nervous.
It feels great. I'm really excited to get deeper into these characters, and I'm super excited for the beginning of every episode now.
Yeah.
We're gonna have these sequences.
I'm terrified. We're level one. It's been a long time since I've been that low a level.
It's scary. And you're a fighter. Right?
I'm like, we're all definitely going to die.
So your ass is like in the front.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So something that's really fun for folks who are familiar with Campaign 1, we're doing something new for Campaign 2 where we're going to either open or close every single episode with a dream, a letter, or a memory, which is going to be kind of our cool way to like introduce you to the character backstories so you all can learn a little bit more. And all of these characters have awesome families that are a huge part of their life, which is something that's, you know, very rare in D&D. So we're going to be exploring that and making sure that is part of every episode. Oh, gosh. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. If this was your first episode, welcome! We're the Venture Maidens. We stream every other Wednesday. You can find us right here on this Twitch channel at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. That's when we go live. We're going to be streaming new episodes. And then 2 weeks after we live stream the episodes, we publish these in podcast format. So if you just type in Venture Maidens anywhere podcasts exist and are free, which is everywhere, you can find what we do and get the nice cleaned up audio versions of each of these episodes. If you really like what we do, you can always head over to our Patreon, where we post a lot of awesome fucking great content all the time for you all to enjoy, including additional, you know, magic items, bonus episodes, where on alternating Wednesdays, we play through a Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign. We have those episodes that are live on our feed. And just a billion different places. So we're so happy you're here. And I love these characters. And I can't wait for the chaos. So on that note, thank you everybody so much for tuning in. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Konowich.
Hello, I am Katie, and I've been playing Luveri Sath, your almost said tiefling, drow rogue.
And I'm Nassim. I played your half-orc fighter, Tony Silvertail.
Word.
And I'm Sage, and I have been Aoife Flannery, your satyr bard.
Oh, God, I love it. Love that. Love that. Well, that's it, everybody. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 2 of Campaign 2. And until then, everybody...
Venture away!
Bye!